Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Two big new studies in the last month reveal that American marriage may be in free fall. Unmarried parenthood skyrocketing. Class is a key factor, but so is race. The trend is strongest by far among African Americans. So does marriage now have a price tag and a color? And does it matter? This hour on Point, what's going on with black marriage and families today and why? You can join the conversation. Why are 72% of black women giving birth now unmarried? And what's happening with marriage, class, and race with the African American family in the context of all the changes we're seeing? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And let us know your city and state when you comment online. Joining me now from Highland, California, is Donna Franklin, author and expert on the African American family, former co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families. Her book, Ensuring Inequality, The Structural Transformation of the African American Family, won the American Sociological Association's 1998 William J. Good Distinguished Book Award. Author also of What's Love Got to Do with It? Understanding and Healing the Rift Between Black Men and Women. Donna Franklin, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And joining us from Nashville, Tennessee, is Anastasia Kerwood, Assistant Professor of African American and Diaspora Studies at Vanderbilt University. Her new book is Stormy Weather, Middle Class African American Marriages Between the Two World Wars. Anastasia Kerwood, thank you for being here as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Donna, first to you. I mean, there has been so much coming out in recent weeks on marriage in this country, and just this week, the National Marriage Project out of the University of Virginia saying that, marriage is fragile and weak, particularly in middle class, in lower economic classes as well. But these numbers coming out from Pew are very high all over the place, and especially high for African-American families. It's not like this just happened yesterday, but it's higher than ever. What's going on, Donna?
Well, what I think people find most shocking is that in 1950, which is before the civil rights movement had even started to escalate, African-Americans had more two-parent families than white families. That is the piece that is so shocking.
Wow.
So what has happened to the African-American family has really happened in the last 5 or 6 decades. And that's what my book really looks at, Ensuring Inequality. It's what has happened in the last 15 years. Because what we know now, and why my book is called Ensuring Inequality, is all of the rigorous research studies have found that growing up in a single-parent family, there's certain cost factors in terms of outcome variables. People are not as likely to achieve well at school, not as likely to be successful as adults. And so you really are at a distinct disadvantage growing up in a single-parent family. And so everything that the civil rights movement fought for and people died for, those advantages and privileges are not being achieved, secured by people who grow up in single-parent families. So that's now the new frontier, is seeing how to give the supports to single-parent families so they can have, you know, equality in terms of outcomes and equal rights and stuff as people who grew up in two-parent families.
And this concerns
challenge.
This concern sometimes controversially often goes all the way back to Daniel Patrick Moynihan, 1965 report way back then. But these new numbers, I mean, to be clear, there are changes right across the board here in middle and lower income families. I mean, 29% of white women giving birth unmarried in 2008, 53% of Hispanic women, 72% of African-American. Then you're looking at children with one parent. What is it? Black children, 52%. White children, 18%. Hispanic children, 27%. But the numbers highest by far for African-American. Donna, do you look at this primarily as an economic issue? That's what you're suggesting as you open here. Is it a cultural issue?
Well,
is it both? What's happening?
What he talks about is the class divide, and you mentioned it. So good for you, Tom. Because what nobody says is that there are bifurcated fertility patterns in the African-American community, which means that African-American women have the lowest fertility rate of all ethnic groups, college-educated black women. They have the lowest fertility rate.
Meaning the smallest number of offspring.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. So that is really the challenge facing the African-American community and our society, is that the greatest growth in our race is coming from those least equipped to raise children and to care for them. So that's really the challenge. And those women who can care for them and give their kids the benefits that society that we all want for our children, they don't have the resources, economic or maybe any of the resources really to care for them. And so that is the real problem.
I mean, it's interesting here. This Pew report also found, though, I mean, attitude-wise, it says 3/4 of blacks say that the whole trend is bad for society, and yet it's happening. Anastasia Curwood, you've been looking back to the interwar period when black couples were wrestling with marriage and black marriage rates were much higher. It's not as though it's always been like it is right now, Anastasia.
This is true, but worries about the numbers have always been, at least in the 20th century. You mentioned the Moynihan Report, which shows you've done your research. But if you go back even further, you can go to E. Franklin Frazier's study of the Negro family in the United States, which came out in 1939. And Frazier was also very concerned about rates of unmarried births, rates of single-parent households. But it's also interesting that my colleague, Donna Franklin, has brought up the differences between middle-class and poorer or working-class African-Americans. At the time Frazier was writing, he was very concerned about poor African-Americans and these rates of unmarried births and single-parent families. But he was also very concerned about middle-class career women and their what he was concerned about, their negative impacts on African-Americans' marriages.
You mean the idea of a woman being outside the home, of having a job?
Yes, and not only having a job, but having a professional job.
I mean,
he reserved a lot of his criticism. If you read his work carefully, he reserved a lot of his criticism for these middle-class career women. He thought that the poorer women were just in a phase, just like any other immigrant population in the United States. He said, oh, well, they're going to eventually come to a point where they'll catch up with white Americans. But he thought that the middle-class women were going in the completely wrong direction.
On the other hand, Donna, I mean, you're saying that what you see within the black community may mirror the broader picture of these new reports saying more affluent families, more marriage, less affluence, more fragile. Still, 1960, 61% of black adults were married. 2008, that's down to 32%. That is a big across the board, general number, Donna.
Yeah, that is a general number. But going back to E. Franklin Frazier's prognostication and concern about professional black women, I think E. Franklin Frazier was looking at that too through sort of a sexist male lens, because what I argue in our article I wrote recently mm-hmm. is that African Americans gave birth to the modern marriage. In the 1890s, mm-hmm. African American couples like W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington, who disagreed on everything, but who both had professional wives who were their equals. And in the white community in the latter part of the 19th century, white women did not, married women did not work outside the home. It was really prohibited. So when we look at even a marriage like Michelle and Barack Obama and see the level of egalitarianism between them, that is not unusual for black professional couples, because that history goes back to the late 19th century and has been carried into the marriages we see today. Well, and that's an untold story, and I'm really the first person to really write about that and include it in the scholarly canon.
It may be the model for more American marriages, but at the same time, you're writing in your most recent book in 2001, Donna, you know, about the rift between black men and women.
Well, it creates the same tension that it creates between whites. When you have women who have, I mean, who else has it said power concedes to nothing but power? Patriarch is hard to dismantle. Men don't want to give up the power they had as head of household and having higher wages than women, which they still have to this day. You know, 80%, we make 80% for every dollar they make. No one wants to give up that kind of power. So that is the tension, and it exists, that's the gender divide right now. And the tension. And as white women, Now 40% of white women make more money than their husbands. And we're seeing the same kind of... Go on, excuse me.
Oh, I would like to underline that my new book, which just came out last week, is about exactly these negotiations over gender roles that, as Professor Franklin says, go back for many, many years. And the story that I tell is of the struggles of African-American couples in everyday life to negotiate those roles. The book starts with the experience of my own grandparents, actually. And in the summer of 1937, my grandmother got a job at a settlement house, which a place where social workers were conducting studies. And she was thrilled about this job. She was a recent college graduate from Cornell, where she had been one of only two African-American women students. And she was so thrilled about this job. Well, her husband was dismayed. And who was my grandfather? He was unhappy that she didn't have a lot of time to write to him. He was working about an hour away as a domestic servant. Mm-hmm. When he came up on his days off, the boarding house where they lived was messy.
And because she wasn't keeping house. At work. Anastasia, hold that thought. I mean, I'm really interested about, you're describing a power tension there, a sort of cultural dynamic. At the same time, we know there's all kinds of economics wrapped around and through that. Anastasia Curwood's new book is Stormy Weather, Middle-Class African-American Marriages Between the Two World Wars. Please stand by in Nashville, Anastasia. And Donna Franklin in California, it's great to have you with us as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the black family, African-American marriage, unmarried, parenthood, single parent, children. We're looking at what's going on and why. Of course, there's a big context right across much of the American landscape. We see more children born outside of marriage. African-American community right at the top in racial terms, 72% of African-American children now born to unmarried mothers. We're looking at what's going on with that with Donna Franklin, author of Ensuring Inequality and What's Love Got to Do with It, Understanding and Healing the Rift Between Black Men and Women. And from Nashville, Tennessee, we're joined by Anastasia Curwood. She's author of the new book, Stormy Weather, Middle-Class African-American Marriages Between the Two World Wars. We'll hear in just a moment from Rick Banks at Stanford University Law School. He's been thinking about this. And Anastasia, how did your grandparents work it out? I mean, can you see in their marriage, they were married after all, but can you see the sort of foreshadowing of the disappearance of marriage from so many black relationships later?
Well, I'd like to underline that they were very much individuals, and the title of my book says African-American Marriages because the assortment of relationships and negotiations that people carried on in the past were so diverse that it's impossible to put them into one box. So while my grandparents really struggled, and actually their marriage failed in a very tragic way, my grandfather committed suicide in 1949.
Was it related to what you're describing, to the dynamics you're describing?
Well, that will always be a mystery. We do know that he was mentally ill and had some substance abuse problems. So it's possible that his own personal psychology had something to do with it. On the other hand, all the evidence points to the fact that he was very unhappy about the way that he was not the most accomplished and intellectual member of that couple.
Donna Franklin, the 16% unemployment today among African Americans, do you point to that as, you know, cause number one or not?
Our problems as a race, really, we have to start with our history in this country, which was slavery. Because what slavery was the great equalizer. It equalized black men and black women in a way that has never really happened for white men and white women. And what people are arguing now is this recession has been the equalizer for white men and white women, in that white men have been more displaced in the workplace than white women. And white women have made substantial gains in this economy than white men. And so, you know, it's the canaries in the cave. I mean, that the way we have gone now, that's happening to the white community And that's why we see the dramatic changes in the white community as well.
Boy, that is interesting. We're going to look at that here in just a moment from Rick Banks. We have a lot of callers as well. I want to begin to get some in. Shenandoah, Virginia. Chris is on the line. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I think the one thing that they haven't mentioned is the jail system. I know economics has something to do with it, but so many African-American men are in jail that it has to affect the amount of African-American women that are married. So
that's interesting. Donna, there's one straight up.
No, he's right on the money. He's right on the money. The number of black men in the that are incarcerated and in the criminal justice system, it is so overwhelming that even Moynihan talks about this, and the problem wasn't as critical then as it is now. But what you have to have in order to have a marriage is generally a marriageable man, and a marriageable man is a man who has a job. And if your men are in the criminal justice system, then we're not going to have the jobs. And so that has contributed to our lower, you know, marriage rate. We have the lowest marriage rates and the highest divorce rates. So that is just a major factor, and I'm glad he mentioned it.
Let me go to Will in Virginia Beach, Virginia, if I may. Will, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I wanted to point out that I think that your guests are simplifying, or at least overly simplifying, the problem. I happen to be both black and married successfully to my wife, and she makes far more money, somewhere in six or seven figures more than I do. In any case, I wanted to say that I have no problem with her being the breadwinner in the family, suffice it to say. The issue is that I have to support her in that effort, and that means that I find myself far more domesticated. And I think a lot of men find themselves in that category these days more than not. I think, if I'm correct in the statistics, black men seem to be outpaced by black women in both school and now in the workplace. And that means that they are going to be making somewhere less than their wives in that respect. So for me, it's not an issue about power in summary. It's just a matter of being domesticated. I want to do just as much as my wife does, but, you know, it's a give and take thing.
So, Will, you're okay with it. It sounds like your marriage is doing well, and I'm glad for that. But when you look right across the board, you know, black women giving birth, 72% unmarried. Now, a lot of those women, I mean, some of them will have good-paying jobs or better-paying than the father of their child, but many won't, I suppose.
I doubt, and I could say the same thing. I came across my wife. She had a child by herself, and she was supporting her child with her family. I had a child myself. I was supporting my child with my extended family, too. We're not doing it alone. But in as far as the relationships go, the marriages go, or on, in terms of making money and them making chiefly more money than we do, I just think that it's not an issue of authority, really. I don't mind. Authority is not an issue in our household.
Then why do you think this rate is so high? What's going on with African-American families? Are African-Americans opting out of marriage, just not enamored of it, or don't feel that they can afford it, or they're in prison?
I certainly was, for the longest time, patient, if not abject, to jumping into marriage. At least with my wife now, she's my second wife, and my first wife, well, there was seriously an issue about us both trying to work and raise kids at the same time. She wasn't interested in it, and I wasn't too, and that wasn't something that we realized going into that marriage. And again, I was sort of confronted with that issue now, but we're far more, at least in my second marriage, successful at cooperating on the matter than...
Will, I wish you very good luck with it, and I really appreciate your call and your candor right there. Donna Franklin, Anastasia Kerwood, please stand by. Joining us right now from Stanford, California, is Ralph Richard Banks, Rick Banks, professor at Stanford University Law School, expert on issues around race and inequality. His forthcoming book is Marriage for White People, How the African-American Marriage Decline Affects Everyone. Ralph Richard Banks, Rick Banks, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Pleasure to be with you.
So be on your good behavior. We know your sister, and she's really great, Sandy. We're expecting great stuff from you as well. What do you see going on? We'll look at, who marriage is for, but what about the plain figures and how low the marriage rate is, how high the unmarried birth rate is in the African-American community? It's not only there that it's growing, but it's highest by far there. How do you interpret it, Rick?
Right. Well, let me just add that what most intrigues me about this is that there are a series of puzzles here.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to solve those puzzles is to try to understand African Americans in the context of American society, and even to understand what's happening in American society in the context of, you know, change in the Western world.
Mm.
So that's the perspective I bring. It is true that there, you know, 70% or north of 70% mm-hmm. of black children are born to unmarried mothers. A lot of that, as Donna Franklin correctly observed, is the result of women, higher educated, better educated African-American women not having children. And these numbers are much higher. You know, it was 25% in 1960. It's 70% now.
Yeah.
In 1960, whites were 4%. Now they're north of 25%,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So
29%. Mm-hmm.
Right. So what that tells us is that there's something broader, some broader changes in American society that are causing the trends with whites to follow the trends with African Americans.
I look at that. That's fascinating. But you're also writing. I saw you writing earlier this year for the New York Times that African American marriage. You wrote, Rick, the decline is not limited to the poor or economically marginal. Middle class black women are more unmarried than any time since slavery. You wrote.
Right. Right. Well, this is again. So these are some of the puzzles. Right. Is that among mm-hmm. among whites, the marriage decline is mostly limited to the poor. Among whites, women who don't graduate from high school are likely to have children without being married. They're less likely to ever marry. If they do marry, they're more likely to divorce. At the other extreme, upper middle class white women who go to college or go to graduate school, professional school, they actually have fairly stable marriages. Their marriages are probably more stable now than their parents' marriages or their grandparents' marriages even would have been. Their divorce rates have been going down, and most of them marry, albeit later in life.
Those are affluent white women, you're saying.
These are affluent white women,
yeah,
right.
But you write black men, you say even those right. who are the best educated and most financially secure, you write, are more likely than ever to be unmarried.
So here's the puzzle, right, is that for whites, the marriage decline runs along class lines.
Mm.
But for blacks, it does not. Even when you look at well-educated black women, you find, for example, that college-educated black women are twice as likely as college-educated white women never to marry. As Donna Franklin also correctly noted, these college-educated black women are less likely to have children than their white peers. So there's something going on there, and it's not limited to the poor.
So what is it if it's not about economic stress or a sense that you've got to, you know, sort of have your picket fence before you can marry? How do you interpret it, Rick?
Well, I should tell you just to be forthright. I have a book coming out. It's
yes.
Marriage for White People, and my publisher has me under a bit of a gag order, right? So I can't, you know, sort of throw
okay,
the book out
so
there.
Okay, so be coy, but give us a sense.
But let me just say that the dominant approach is to talk about culture and black culture, and that's not the answer, and that can't be the answer, right? Can't be the answer. And the reason culture can't be the answer is that what we're doing here is we're talking about a change, right? As your guests noted earlier, this is a change from the mid-20th century till now, right? It's really hard to try to come up with a story about, you know, black culture changing in a way that, you know, is not part of changes in American society. So the dominant approach focusing on black culture is not the answer. What we need to try to look at is, yeah, so what we need to try to look at is how marriage is changing, how the roles of men and women are changing, all the issues that people have raised. I mean, they're all sort of part of the mix. But it's really a hard question, though, to understand the social phenomenon.
Donna, come in here and very specifically.
On the... Never met Rick, don't know Rick,
okay.
But I agree 100%. It's not about culture. It's not about culture. It's about a confluence of forces that have come together to shape marriage. And just like I opened with in 1950, mm-hmm. there were more two-parent black families than white families. So how does that change occur? It is
right.
some macro-level stuff happening that interacts with the micro-level stuff.
But if it's not economics, Rick says that it's not about economic stress, that even at upper levels
no,
of income
is
and
factor. It's not the whole factor.
But there's got to be some culture in there, doesn't there? I mean, you may want to parse it very finely. I'm all for that. But if it's not just economic stress, The rest is culture, isn't it? One kind or another?
Well, can the historian has something to say
okay,
here, which
okay.
is
Please.
That in the space of 20 years, so between the beginning of the 20th century, the 1900s, and then the 1920s, a lot changed with the meanings of marriage and what people expected from their marriage. The idea that your partner was your companion, that you were sexually compatible, that you got your emotional fulfillment from mm-hmm. your marriage. That at the beginning of the 20th century, people began to expect more from their marriages, and people in the 1920s were all up in arms about no-fault divorce, and is there a divorce epidemic in this country? So I agree that I'm the first to say that economic injustice is a serious problem facing African Americans. There's no doubt at all. However, expectations for marriages and ideas about what people think their marriages should be like have changed over time.
So what are you saying by that? That we're headed further in this direction because expectations of marriage have become too high? People don't feel they can live up to it?
Well, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois said in the 20s, he said that expectations for marriage were too high and that he predicted more failed marriages in the future. It might be that things are going to continue to change. I cannot predict. I'm a historian. I can't predict what will happen. But we do know that the social meaning that people put on marriages are not at all stable. It's a moving target. Nobody agrees about what marriages should look like, least of all now in a time where things are changing so fast. I don't know exactly where things will wind up or what people are thinking, but I did appreciate the caller who said that in his marriage, his wife earning more money than he and his decision to marry a little bit later came down to very personal decisions, and I appreciate what people are doing on the ground and in their everyday lives to make these kinds of decisions. It's hard to know. But
those personal decisions are adding up to big sea changes. Rick, you're a little more in the predictive mode here. I mean, are you – Donna says maybe you've got the canary in the coal mine here looking at African-American families and marriages. Are you saying the whole country is going this way? You know, are blacks actually out front here in some way? Is that a good thing?
Well, we may be in the context of the United States, right? We're certainly at the forefront of a broader trend, right? That's the most important thing for people to understand, is that if you want to know how marriage is changing for whites or Latinos or Asian Americans, you should look at how marriage is changing for African Americans.
Right? 72% of births outside of marriage, is that a good trend?
Well, it's frankly, reserve judgment on that and simply note that African Americans out of wedlock birth rate would not be considered high if they were in Sweden.
Yeah, but Swedes, the Pew study said Swedes may not be married, but they stay together even if they're not married. So you have children with two parents.
Right, actually many of that 72%, much of that 72% figure actually consists of parents who are involved. More than half of the parents who have children without being married are actually in a relationship and in many cases live together at the time of the child's birth.
Donna, are you comfortable with this trend?
There are connections here.
Donna, are you comfortable?
I think the caller who called in that really made a major contribution to this discussion is the good guy who called in and said he's very comfortable in the role of being the stay-at-home kind of dad. He didn't describe himself in that way. But he supports his wife, who is the major breadwinner. And that's what we're really talking about, is a dramatic shift in gender roles in the last 30 to 40 years.
But he's the exception by the numbers, isn't he?
Yes, but as we see society changing, that's going to have to be more of the exception.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the black family, African-American marriage, unmarried parenthood, single-parent children. We're looking at what's going on and why 72% of African-American children now born to unmarried mothers. Now, that is not the only race category where you find a lot of that. 53% of Hispanic, 29% of white women unmarried when they give birth, but 72%, that's definitely out front. We wonder what it means. We've been joined by Donna Franklin, award-winning author, scholar of African-American families, family creation. Anastasia Kerwood is with us from Nashville, assistant professor at Vanderbilt, author of Stormy Weather, Middle-Class African-American Marriages Between the Two World Wars. She tells the story of her own grandparents and others in trying to figure out the way. Ralph Richard Banks, Rick Banks, joins us from Stanford University Law School, author of the forthcoming Is Marriage for White People? How the African-American Marriage Decline Affects Everyone. And we're at 800-423-TALK. Zulika is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Zulika, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment, and not to simplify what we're discussing, what's being discussed, but one thing that we're failing to look at also is the fact that society, the media, in reference to these various role models, athletes, you have just the media itself who perpetuates and it, I guess, okays being a single, it's okay to be a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
So many movie stars, so many actors, actresses are out here having children out of wedlock, and so now our younger children are seeing it is now okay to have kids. Our values have totally changed from what it used to be several years ago. So now, once upon a time, what was shunned upon is now accepted.
Zulika, I appreciate your call and your observation. Donna Franklin, what about role models in this whole trending that we see?
No, that there's no question that our perceptions of marriage and single parenting and everything has changed over time. And it's just not the role model. Societies over time, the mores and the social norms change. And they shift, and the media is a factor. But that changes in all societies over time. So there's no question about that.
But that's a kind of value-free observation. I mean, our caller, Zulika, is saying, sounds like she's not happy about this.
Well, the bigger factor, I would argue, is gender roles, the change in gender roles over time. And that's the huge shift with the women's liberation that started in the 60s and 70s. That's much bigger. That trumps, you know, the media and the influence of media. It's just women want equality with men. And in the 19th century, when we were constructing gender roles, women's place was in the home. In the 1950s, when we saw Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best, those couldn't get on television.
But are you saying that for Americans or African Americans, you cannot have both equality with men and high rates of successful marriage?
That's where the tension, that's exactly, you hit it, Tom. That's the source of the tension. We get down to gender issues and conflict between the genders. Because if you have a patriarchal model of marriage with men in control and head of household, and then you give women equality, there's going to be some tension there.
Rick, you know, part of this conversation was spurred when we were looking at the Pew Report, I don't know, 10 days or 2 weeks ago, and we had a caller from Omaha, Nebraska, African-American woman, Muslim woman, and, you know, who was raising questions about the African-American history here. And through her own choice, I guess, her Islam, you know, sort of maybe going, I don't know, maybe she's going with what Don is talking about here. But can it really be that the whole huge chunk of this country, or maybe as you put it, one day the whole country, can't have gender equality and successful marriage? Really?
Well, that's a big question. I think there people are struggling with the changing gender roles. One fact that is important to keep in mind is that when women earn the bulk of the family's income, there's evidence that that does lead to higher divorce rates. Now, there's a question about how do we respond to that, but that actually is a fact, that when women earn the bulk of the family's income, those couples are actually more likely to divorce than couples in which the man earns the bulk of the family income.
You sound like a, you know, conservative preacher on Sunday morning here.
Well, that's just a social fact. You know, what's important is that we, first of all, try to be clear about what is actually happening in the society, right? I mean, what are the trends? And there's a lot of empirical evidence on these matters. And, you know, people might have different responses to that fact.
But the Pew study said affluent families are having or marrying more and being more successful in those marriages. And those affluent families, in many cases, are affluent because they're two-income families.
Oh, they are. I didn't say there's anything wrong with having two incomes. I said that couples in which the wife earns the bulk of the family's income actually have a higher divorce rate. Right?
I don't know.
Divorce rate. Let me add in that there's nothing wrong with the wife earning more of the family's income, of course, right? The reason they have a higher divorce rate is complicated, but it has to do with the fact that they're operating without the sort of script or beyond the sort of script that provided a model for earlier generations.
Anastasia,
so earlier generations had a script, and now they don't have a script. And people are struggling with how to play their role.
Anastasia, I want to come to you on one point in particular. There's a notion out there, we're talking about patriarchy here. I think there's a pretty widely held notion, I don't know if it's right or wrong, that African-American culture has had more of a matriarchy in many cases. What about that background?
Well, there is a myth that African-American women have had more power than African-American men. That's not exactly true. What we have seen is a greater degree of egalitarianism, at least through the 20th century and as Dr. Franklin pointed out, from slavery. So we're not looking at more power. What we are looking at, however, is the increased options of all women, including African American women, for economic independence. And remember that the male breadwinner model presumes a dependent wife. Well, as African American women have moved into jobs that have allowed them some economic independence, that hasn't been so necessary. I'd also like to just question Professor Banks about the correlation versus causation of a higher earning wives contributing to a higher divorce rate. I'm curious about how that works because E. Franklin Frazier, the sociologist we talked about earlier, he correlated moving to the cities and female-headed households with higher rates of juvenile delinquency, whereas there might be other factors such as economic poverty that would explain those as well. So is there a causation or is it merely a correlation?
Well, I think, again, these are very, very difficult issues to sort out, and, that is a great question. My own sense, based on a lot of the research that I did for my book, is that there is a that couples in which they're occupying atypical gender roles, right, or in which the wife, say, is the
atypical in what year? 1902?
Right now. Couples in which the wife earns a bulk of the income, it raises issues for men, and that also raises issues for women. Frankly,
are those issues bigger for black men for some reason?
Absolutely.
And they may be bigger for black men, right? Again, we don't have really good evidence on that. That black men in some ways are more egalitarian than white men. But yes, of course, they raise issues for men generally. And in some ways, those issues may be more acute for black men. But what is also important to understand is that they also raise issues for women, because women don't have a cultural script either for how to act when they're the primary earner in a family.
Right.
Donna, are you ready to look at these numbers and say, well, that's just African-American women in this case choosing? This is their choice? They prefer this?
Oh, no, it's not a preference. There's no question that black women do not have the marriage options that white women do. Asian women have the highest marriage rate of any ethnic group, and then white women, and then you go on down the line. I think Hispanic women are third. But there's no question that black women do not have the options in marriage, especially professional black women. And that's just a fact. And so those who want to get married don't have that option.
Right. No, I think, I think that's exactly right. And this is the spot that my book fits in, actually, that we've had a lot of discussion about race and marriage. And mostly the discussion focuses on the poor. Right, and Donna Franklin has done some excellent work to try to broaden that discussion, but we don't have enough about the black middle class. Right, when the black middle class is discussed, it's almost as though it's just a simple issue of why can't black women get a date, and people kind of make light of it almost. But actually, the decline in marriage among the black middle class is one of the most serious social developments of the second half of the 20th century that has not been analyzed or discussed in any serious manner.
That's
a big problem.
80% of black professional women are single. That is the latest statistic
on
the marriage rates of black professional women. 80% are single.
So,
nobody's
one,
talking talking about it.
Well, we're trying to right here, but I'm losing I'm losing track of one thread here, Donna. I mean, you know, you can look back at this in a scholarly way, but I mean, this sort of detached. But isn't this a problem? I mean, I'm looking here at black children. Three times as likely as white children to live with one parent. 52% of black children with one parent. 18% of white children with one parent. Is that not a problem for African-American children? Is this, you know, yes, it's a fact, but isn't it also a problem, maybe even a crisis?
No, it is a problem, and that's why I wrote Ensuring Inequality, because I was trying to put a clarion call out there to say we got to talk about this and deal with it. But what I really want to stress is the bifurcated fertility patterns in our community. You're really talking about two distinct groups, and so the umbrella of race is not sufficient.
You mean it looks worse because lower-income African-Americans will have more children, and so that drives those numbers up?
And that's where the growth of our race is. And so that's, again, an area that we need to bring some attention to. How do the blacks with the resources, both educationally and materially and spiritually and emotionally, whatever those resources are, help, you know, have outreach in our own community, those who really are struggling?
I mean, this is interesting. We had Eugene Robinson on from the Washington Post a few weeks ago, Rick, and, of course, he's been writing about the African-American community separating into very distinct, different economic classes here. And, you know, Donna's kind of pointing at the same thing, saying there's different stories going on here. On the other hand, you're looking at middle class and saying there's more unmarried there than ever, that it's not, you know, limited to the poor or economically marginal.
Right. Now, Tom, that's an excellent point. In some ways, the story of the black middle class is distinct from that of the poor. But in other ways, the story of the black middle class is continuous with that of the poor. And that's the same relation that we see between the experiences of African-Americans generally and of whites. In some ways, the black story is a distinct story and it's unique, but in other ways, it's universal. And the most important thing to understand is those connections, the ways in which the stories are in some instances particular and in other instances universal.
Let me get a couple more calls here, if I may. Atlanta, Georgia. Mark, you're on the air, Mark. Thanks for calling.
How are you? I've been listening to the dialogue so far, and I find it interesting that as a black male, 49, I've been married before, and I was married to someone who could not understand and take the role as a helpmeet with a strong black man who was a provider for a family that came from a strong family. And it's interesting that you all, the numbers that you throw out in the comments that you have to say, I totally agree. Being in Atlanta and being a single black male is a crisis, and it's really sad that, you know, as a black man, nice-looking black man to boot, professionally employed, it's hard for me to find a lady who has morals these days.
Who has morals? By that, do you mean who wants to get married? What do you mean, Mark?
Who wants to get married, who wants to take a relationship and start from the bottom up, getting to know me getting to know her, me introducing her to my family, and so on and so on. And actually going through the basis of a relationship, most of the women I've met in Atlanta, they want to throw themselves at you because you are single and you are somebody who's real.
Are you prepared to have a marriage based in equality, Mark? Would that work for you?
Well, I'm looking for somebody who has old-fashioned values, that had strong parents, or grew up in a relationship or a situation where there was morals and character that were built in them from their grandparents, the parents, to whoever. And I find that very, very slim in Atlanta these days.
And what about yourself? You're not ready to throw yourself at that, nice-looking lady? Are you ready to go through all this?
In Atlanta, it's too many. It's probably 11 to 1 in Atlanta, as we speak.
Wow. Rick, thank you, Mark. What do you say, Rick?
I think that's exactly true. I interviewed a number. I mean, my book is a combination of research and scholarship on one hand, and then interviews and personal stories that I've gathered from people around the country. And I interviewed a lot of people to Atlanta, and the women there definitely echo his sentiment that the numbers are skewed. But, of course, you know, they also say it's difficult to find a man precisely for that reason.
Anastasia, what do you think your grandparents would have to say about the picture that we're looking at and talking about here today? I mean, they struggled with their marriage, but they had it. What would they think of what's happened here?
Well, you know, something that's interesting is that that's parallel with the caller who just called in, that the husband and wife had different ideas about what their marriages should look like. And the caller has encountered women who presumably want to be prospective spouses who have a different idea from what he has about what marriages should look like. And those divergences have continued up and down through time. It's never a settled issue about what people should do within marriages. Certain people hold certain values and others will hold divergent ones, and there you have conflict. What is interesting is that people are always connected to their individuality, what they want, their own temperament, if you will, and also what's going around them in history. So we've talked about prisons, we've talked about jobs, we've talked about culture. All of those things go into this mix, so to speak, about what people will think of their marriages.
You know, this is one we are clearly not even close to solving today, but I just keep looking at those numbers, and this is important. However you interpret what's going on here, we'll have to come back to it. It's been around, and it is around up in bigger lights than ever right now. We're going to just have to leave this one unsettled today and give it more attention. The three of you have been really great in helping us probe in here. Anastasia Curwood's new book is Stormy Weather, Middle Class African-American Marriages Between the Two World Wars. Anastasia, thank you very much for being with us from Vanderbilt there.
You're very welcome.
And Rick Banks, Ralph Richard Banks, look for his book coming out next year, Is Marriage for White People? Rick Banks, thank you for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you so much, Tom.
And Donna Franklin, author of What's Love Got to Do with It? Thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.